Broadcasting from the super secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 11P7.
Welcome, everyone. This edition of Level 11P7, which is going to be a little bit like what Dan and Maya did last week. This week, it's just me and Tim Harvey.
Hello.
And I guess we do, you know, part one here and part two on H2O. they'll get to know how the other show sounds. One of the things that we've been looking at, the fact there is no Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week,
right?
Because of the Thanksgiving holiday, so we're not going to do a huge, big, long 1 hour, 1 hour and a half program this week. But I thought we'd take the opportunity to talk about Jessica Jones.
Yes.
And the simple fact of the matter is that Tim and I are the only ones out of the crew who have seen it so far. I know Jordan Williams is planning on doing the binge watching, and she'll have recaps. That's the plan right now anyway. But Tim and I have sat and gone through all of them, and very impressed.
Oh, yeah.
Very impressed. And what did you think of last week's S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, since I wasn't actually able to be part of last week's episode, I actually quite enjoyed it. I thought it was really, it moved the story along, but also set up a lot of where we're going. And yeah. I thought that was actually quite well done. And of course, pulled the rug out from underneath several things we've been, you know, this is the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it a lot. It was a good spy episode. It was a good SHIELD intelligence agency
episode. And that's what everybody keeps going back to, is that this one actually felt like S.H.I.E.L.D. was actually being S.H.I.E.L.D.
You
know, the spy organization, the clandestine figure things out, gathering intelligence type of thing. And to see Constance Zimmer's face, the way she played that when Rosalind figured out that she'd been duped, I think she's Abigail Brand.
Well, you know what? I want her to be Abigail Brand, and she should become Abigail Brand.
I think she's going to reveal to Coulson who she really is because of this. This, now she has to earn Coulson's trust back again, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Coulson's proven that he's on the up and up more than the guy she was working, the senator she was working for, Gideon. So, you know, she's going to flip sides.
Has Powers Booth ever played a good guy? He's so good at just playing he's so good at just playing the ethically bereft individual. Yeah. I mean, he's just, and it's something, maybe I mean, just something about the smile and the voice. He's just really, really good at
it.
He's always a joy to watch.
He also does the farmland pork radio commercials.
Right, yes, well.
For the love of pork.
He's one
maybe
of those.
Maybe we should get Farmland to sponsor a show.
There we go.
Hey, Farmland, aren't they based here? Are they here in Kansas City?
You know what? I'm not sure.
I'll have to look that up.
But yeah, no, I'm, I always like watching Powers Booth. He's just fun. Yeah.
And the kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Fitzsimmons.
Yeah, well, you know, it's about bloody time.
even though Fitz...
We're cursed. Yeah, I know.
Like, really?
Well, but you know what? I think, you know, it is the reaction you expect from him in a way, because she did say that she thinks she loves the other guy.
Mm, Will.
Will. And that's Fitz. I mean, that's just Fitz in a nutshell right there. You know, he's going to save Will. He can't find anything wrong with him, and he looked. So, yeah.
No, I want a reason to hate him.
Exactly.
I can't hate him.
And it's worse because, you know, like Fitz pointed out.
Well,
because
he saved her life.
Well, not only that, but he's tall and handsome, and he's an astronaut, and, you know, all of these things and that Fitz is not.
Who do you think he's going to end up being?
Cannon fodder. Will, I don't have high hopes for the survival of Will.
No.
I suspect that he will either survive long enough for a tearful reunion and then die in her arms.
Yep. Saving her life again.
Gemma.
Yeah, exactly. Or they'll get back to the planet and they'll find that he's already dead.
For those of you who are finding this show very, very recently, this has been a running gag since the first season when Ward was revealed to be a Hydra agent, because he was – the dynamic between him and Sky, right. Daisy – was such that a beginning, it really felt like they were playing the brother-sister dynamic. And
right.
then suddenly there's a romantic component. And we all just went, wait, what? Because it came so much out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
And when Ward finally turned and we got the knockdown drag out between him and May.
Right.
It was, you know, the expectation at that point was that at some point he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm glad he
was going to die with Sky's name on his lips.
Right. Yeah.
Sky.
So that's become a running gag ever since. So anytime we talk about anybody dying, that usually comes out. But
The words.
Interesting that they tie in the origin of Hydra with this who's he what's it that's out on Planet Purple.
Right.
Did you catch that?
Yeah,
I thought that was – I'm like
– But you know what? I think it's actually kind of cool because it makes Hydra a little bit more interesting.
All connected.
And I think that, you know, the idea that – because just like S.H.I.E.L.D. has, Hydra has, all the different fictional agencies in the MCU and just the regular MU.
Yeah.
Have these like big rich histories of how they've evolved and changed with the times, and the idea that this is something that is millennia old, and this secret society that has been, you know, attempting to bring back, you know, the Cthulhu of the MCU of basically, I mean, it's very much that kind of, you know, revive the ancient gods kind of thing.
Well, it also brings a cosmic component to Hydra, which helps set up S.W.O.R.D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one more brick in the pavement leading along that path to S.W.O.R.D.
And if they don't go with S.W.O.R.D., they don't give her a chance to be Abigail Brandon, they are missing an opportunity.
Oh, they have
they
to.
They really are. Because, I mean, you've got, you know, if you want to link all this stuff together and take it into, you know, when the Guardians of the Galaxy meet with everybody else, having S.W.O.R.D. would be just a really neat piece of the puzzle to have. So,
well, plus you can tie it into Captain Marvel too.
Oh yeah. So I will be very disappointed should we not get this, because I think it'll be a missed opportunity.
Yep. Speaking of missed opportunities, you don't want to miss this opportunity.
Uh-oh.
See what I did there?
Yeah, very nice.
SuperheroStuff.com. They are our sponsor for the H2O podcast, but we're going to go ahead and give them a plug on this one because this feels like we're doing an H2O.
Right, yeah.
And they've got a sale going on this week, is the reason I mentioned it tonight. Through the Thanksgiving week, they're doing the pre-Turkey Day sale. And then Black Friday, mm-hmm. they're going to do over 1,000 items are going to be marked down 20 to 30%.
Very nice.
A free T-shirt on orders of $75 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting together a special Black Friday Hero Box.
Mm-hmm.
Hero Box being you buy the box, you get stuff in the box. And you open it up to find out what's in the box. You don't know. It just,
right.
It just goes. So that's going to run all weekend. It'll start Thursday. And then Cyber Monday is going to be the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prices marked down and stuff. So they're also going to be doing some doorbuster flash sales, where you get 25% off of certain items. So that's the SuperheroStuff.com. They are
your
sponsor of H2O.
And for your fans of genre entertainment, this is a great option to avoid messing with the crowds.
Oh, yeah.
Although, as a former retail, a lot of different things I could say there. As someone who used
employee,
to work in retail. Yes, employee.
As a retail survivor.
Yes. It's not anywhere near as bad as it used to be. People have figured out that, you know, you can get more stuff online.
And you've got a lot of companies that are sitting there going, no, we're going to shut down. We're going to be closed. It's a holiday.
Right.
We're going to make it a holiday.
Well, and you know what? I think that's a really
good
thing. Yeah, I think the that trend to, and of course, here's our digression, that trend to be open on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I get it. I completely get the dollar signs, right? You know, it's a business, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you lose the very simple fact that, you know, you lose the fact that it can be, it's one of the few days of the year where we culturally sit there and go spend time with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Go spend, you know, go
and
have.
We're supposed to be thankful for what we have.
Yeah.
Instead, we're out shopping for more that we don't have.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and you know.
Yeah, the disconnect on it is so.
So I mean, I get it. I get it on, you know, hey, it's business. But at the same time, it's like, Of course, I can also recall having lunch with my parents and then driving down the street to my store and setting up signs for Black Friday and mm-hmm. in the afternoon and then driving back to my folks' house for dinner and then driving back to the store to set up more signs for the next.
No, sure.
I remember that. Retail. Yeah. Yay.
Yay. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Very good series.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think it's the best thing Marvel's done yet. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean the something that appeals to the largest audience.
Right.
That's something that doesn't have, I mean, because it doesn't. All right. This is not a show for the movie going crowd necessarily. Okay. Because
I can see that.
Your 2-hour movie doesn't allow you to go into character depth.
Right.
And to a certain degree. I mean, it does, but I mean, you can't.
Not as much.
13 hours worth of character depth. In terms of overall writing and world building and establishing a mood mm-hmm. and an environment and giving the kind of character depth that you can give, I think this is the finest thing they've done. And I mean, Daredevil was, I would have said Daredevil was, and now I'm wondering what Luke Cage is going to be like. Because if we get this exponential kind of growth, then Luke Cage is going to be like, okay, well, Luke Cage is the best thing that Marvel's ever done.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because it's...
I'm of two minds.
Kind of stunned.
Yeah, I'm of two minds about Jessica Jones. Because on the craft level, as a filmmaker, mm-hmm. as a writer, as a storyteller, as a journalist, or, you know, as a fan or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I can appreciate what they did with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, given the source material, there's really not any way that you can't do a hard R
right,
type
yeah.
of show. As a Christian, however, mm-hmm. I'm looking at this going, yeah, okay, I shouldn't be watching this.
but then
after watching all 13 episodes,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel much of a need to go back and watch it again.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, okay, I watched it. I saw it. It was really good. And, you know, from an execution standpoint and from what they did, and you're right, the writing is really good. The performances are great. You know, David Tennant just kills it as Kilgrave.
And the truly disturbing thing is that the line between Kilgrave and the 10th Doctor is way too narrow.
Yeah.
It's very disturbing just how much you're going, that feels like a 10th Doctor. Oh, God!
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of moment, you know?
Well, and there was one moment, and I'm not going to spoil it for everybody by telling people where it is, but there's one moment. Kristen Ritter is one moment she's Jessica Jones.
Mm-hmm.
The other moment she's, quote-unquote, air quotes, Jessica Jones under the influence, let's say.
Right, sure.
And she smiles.
Mm-hmm.
It's the big smile when he says, smile.
Right.
Big smile on the dock.
Mm-hmm.
And when she does that, it just completely changes her face.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned it. She's a completely different person there.
Yeah.
And you can see where the performance is for her, that anger
mm-hmm.
and the tension and the stress
yeah.
that Jessica Jones is under. I keep saying Jessica Jones. it's like Kilgrave. He always says, Jessica Jones.
Right, yeah.
But that underlying constant worry and concern and depression and anger and stress.
Oh yeah,
it's there right on the surface. But when she smiles, she just lights up, and all of the lines on her face, all the frown, everything is gone. Mm-hmm. She just I mean, she looks 5 years younger when she does that.
I was thinking about this because, of course, someone who suffers from depression, and my daughter has anxiety and depression as well. So we have these conversations periodically, and because we're both movie people and TV people, and she was one of those people who got really, really upset at Frozen because there's a depression allegory in Frozen. I mean, it's the writers talk about it, and it kind of made her angry because people didn't grasp it, right? It was there, and it's like, and people are like, how can you not see this? And she and I had this conversation where it's like, look, you have to understand that movies and TV do not ever show mental illness the way it is, okay? Real depression ain't sexy.
Right.
You know, so, Silver Linings Playbook, adorable movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that film. But it kind of gives you the idea that, you know, you can find someone whose mental illness complements yours, which is crazy. Which, I mean, that's crazy talk.
Yeah, literally.
Literally. I would, you know, but this is a wonderful, and I say that with a curious use of the word wonderful, display and representation of depression and PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is everything about this character is broken, but she's not bowed.
Yeah.
And there's pain and anger and just, I mean, she's constantly hurting inside.
Mm-hmm.
But she gets up and she does the thing and she, you know, and she's not going to let, you know, this monster destroy her or the people she cares about. It's right. Really, and again, you can do that when you've got 13 hours where you can sit there and give those quiet moments, and so much I think what really worked was the quiet moments.
Mm-hmm.
Where
the character bits, the interaction between people.
So I think that's really one of the reasons why I think it's probably the best thing they've done, is because it has room to breathe.
Yeah.
Same way that Daredevil had room to breathe and give you a sense of who those people were, and give you a sense of, you know, a certain sympathy for the Kingpin.
One thing that I came away with it. Having fought depression myself, you and I have talked about this a little bit. One of the things, one of my coping mechanisms, is diving into work.
Sure,
you know, if I feel an episode coming on, you know, unfortunately, most of the time I can feel it coming.
Right,
I can find something to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, constantly. You know,
I do something very similar. Yeah,
write stories. I binge watch TV stuff so I can catch up on shows, so I know what I'm talking about on these shows. Mm-hmm. You know, just something. I dive into work.
Right.
And that's something I noticed about Jessica is she, every now and then, she's got that moment where she just deflates.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I got to keep going. I can't stop. Mm-hmm. I can't quit. You know, if I quit, people die.
Right.
And, you know, fortunately, I haven't got that problem. Yeah. You know, people aren't going to die if I stop, you know, editing a show or whatever. But she recognizes, at least on a certain level, she recognizes that she does make a difference, even though she doesn't feel like a hero.
Right.
The whole failed hero thing. And I thought they played that pretty well with the whole jewel and the costume and
right.
all that. You know, this idea that she doesn't even let herself think about the possibility of being the good guy. Because of the guilt that she carries around with her, she doesn't feel like a good guy, even though, you know, she's the hero of the story.
Right,
she's not the hero. Well, and they do a really good job presenting that. I thought
they took something that is, because the whole show is very, especially visually, is very film noir.
Oh,
influenced.
Yeah.
There's so many great moments in where you're sitting there going, look at that shot. I mean, it's
beautiful. The cinematography is great.
And that recurring theme of a negative space and an individual. So you split the screen between, you know, there's a wall in the way and you just see a person sitting on the right or on the left. And the other side of the screen is blocked.
Or so, there's a bunch of stuff in the foreground, yeah, and you're seeing people back in the behind.
It's,
yeah,
it's very really just, good. Stylistically,
could,
it's a very cool
you
thing.
You could do this. I was talking to Sonia about it, my best friend, and I said, you could watch this in black and white.
Oh, yeah.
And we've talked about this on Gotham.
Right.
First season. Because it felt noirish there, mm-hmm, before it went round to Ben. This one, you could watch in black and white.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, David Tennant is not purple.
Right.
You know, the purple is there, but mm-hmm, you don't necessarily, I mean, it doesn't have but anything to do with his
performance. Even in black and white, those purple flashes would, mm-hmm, still show up as a change in the lighting.
Yeah.
And it would still, you would still get a sense of it. Yeah, no, it's, they took many of the film noir tropes, okay, the down and out detective.
Yep.
You know, the flawed hero.
The first person narration.
First person narration.
Yeah.
And the best noir characters, and traditionally, you know, you go back in the 40s and 50s, they're males, but they're broken. They're flawed people. They've got sins of their past. Film noir is the sins of the past haunting the present, giving you an uncertain future, right? And so you've got flawed men, broken flawed men, dangerous women, and this is the flip.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that the best detective stories, it's not about the gender of the character. It's about the flaws of the character.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, right. You know, the reason you can have Peggy Carter rooted in the 1940s,
mm-hmm,
and be just as strong a character as any male character in that same kind of position is because it's about the kind of character she is, right? Who she is, what she is,
right?
And that's not a gender thing. That's just a character thing, right? Film noir, you know, taking it and setting it in the modern era and setting it in the superhero world and then flipping it so that you have a strong female character who's just as broken as any Bogart part.
Yeah, I really got a Sam Spade vibe.
Oh, yeah.
From her.
Well, and I think that you get that there's something about the broken hero and the idea that when you get to the end of the story and they're still broken, but
yeah,
they've got there's a little bit of glimmer of hope. That's actually a lot more satisfying than, and they all lived happily ever after, because that doesn't feel real. And yeah. I think that something like this, you get that sense that, you know, okay, the world is not as dark a place,
mm-hmm,
but
yeah,
it's still pretty dark.
Well, and I like too the fact that even though we're at street level,
mm-hmm,
there's still an acknowledgement that it's part of the overall universe because the green, you know, go after the green guy or the flag waver. I wasn't even there. You know, they talk about the invasion.
That is one of my quibbles with the show, though, because she.
But it doesn't feel terribly out of place.
Well, no. My quibble is that she's playing in the same sandbox, literally, like down the street,
right,
from Matt Murdock.
Yeah,
and the only real crossover we get is from Rosario Dawson. And not that I need to see Matt Murdock, but there's no real acknowledgement that there's a vigilante in the neighborhood. There's no real acknowledgement that there was the kingpin of crime was exposed,
right?
And that so that it and I and
well, it makes me wonder when the timing is.
Well, and it has to be afterwards because you know, the night nurse is talking about the fact she knows this guy,
yeah,
right. So what.
I wonder if they're going on at the same time.
But it didn't necessarily feel like it, but it also didn't bother me until I thought back on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay, no, it didn't register until Rosario Dawson showed up. And then I felt the absence. Mm-hmm. And that didn't sink in until after I finished watching the show.
Right.
And that was like, huh. So but the basis of the quality of the characters and their stories, it didn't really matter to me until after the fact. The guy playing Luke Cage,
Mike Coulter.
Wow.
Yeah.
That especially. I mean, okay. All the moments between him and Jess. All right. All the Luke Jess moments were just
electric. I thought these two had great chemistry. Mm-hmm. But my favorite moment is still when the reveal that his skin cannot be pierced in the bar where the fight, and the guy's like,
oh, yeah,
coming at him with the bottle. He's like, shh, and just keeps hitting him with it. It's yeah, like, and there's the look on his face like, do we have to go through this again? I mean, it's just, yeah, it's, you know, he's like,
really? Yeah.
And that kind of played into the whole way that all of these people view their powers. They're just there. Mm-hmm. There's not like they're not reveling in them. There's no.
It's a nuisance.
There's no joy in what they can do. It's more like it's just what it is. So every time that Jesse uses her powers, it's so nonchalant. It's so matter of fact. It's so, oh, I can just do this thing. You know, it's like. It's like, okay, I can write a song, I can program a computer, I can shoot a basketball, I can ride a bike. It's all that kind of just, you know, here it is. Here's the thing.
Yeah, I can just bend steel with my bare hands.
You know, I can break this lock off this locker. Chink. Okay, who cares? Yeah. You know, just, I don't know, just the writing on this show, I was just, okay, so far, the MCU TV world, the Netflix TV world, because you know we've talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and some of their missteps story wise,
but I think some of that probably stems from the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is more directly tied in,
at least with
Captain America movies.
Oh yeah, I would agree.
And it's on ABC and not Netflix, so you've got a lot more network hands in the pot.
Well, yeah.
Funny thing is, I noticed maybe first or second episode in the opening title sequence. Mm-hmm. Did you count how many producers and executive producers and co-executive producers are on this thing?
No.
Something like a dozen? 15? Yeah. I mean, it was, here are the stars, you know, Kristen Ritter, Mike Coulter, Carrie Ann Moss, all this group, right? And then... and then you started getting into the supervising producers, co-executive producers, producers, you know, Alan Fine, Stan Lee, Jeff Lowe, group being there, Melissa Rosenberg, created by Melissa Rosenberg, written by Melissa Rosenberg, all this stuff. I was like, how many producers has this show got? Because that was the entire rest of the credit roll in the title sequence. No music.
Yeah.
You know, I would have expected a music credit on the beginning of the show.
Oh, yeah, because the music was... good.
Really good, and the theme song in the opening title sequence was really good.
Yeah, Melissa Rosenberg, by the way, just a big, huge shout out. We need more from her.
Well, and I saw an interview, and I don't remember where it was. I read it today. They were asking her about season two for Jessica Jones, and she says we don't know yet. She's hoping for one. She's lobbying for one.
I would be.
The thing that she says is that she said the biggest challenge right now to season two of the show is the logistics of it, because right now they've got Luke Cage they're working on now.
Sure.
Then you've got Iron Fist. Then you've got Defenders. There's season two of Daredevil. All of that is already in play.
That's true.
Which she's hopeful that maybe you get season two of Jessica Jones before Defenders.
Yeah.
But she said just based on what's on the plate right now, it looks like if they get a season two, it would come after Defenders.
Which I completely get, and I also I hate that. It's just I'm looking forward to all these shows, but and you don't wanna you do
then you could get a crossover with She-Hulk though. I mean, Jessica Jones and Jennifer Walters.
Oh God, that just would that be so much fun. The light and the dark. There's a team up.
Yeah,
that could be a lot of fun. Yeah, you know it's.
Well, and in that interview with Rosenberg, she was also talking about the fact that when the show was originally pitched, which was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It did not have. Trish, Patsy Walker,
right,
as the best friend. It had Carol Danvers,
right,
as the best friend. And in between when she first made the pitch and when it finally actually got the green light is when Marvel said, you can't have Carol Danvers.
But you know what?
And he had to adjust. But I think it works. I mean, I think it's a really good
I think it's a vast improvement.
Yeah.
I think. Well, they were also talking that was going to be back on network.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you would have.
You would not have been able to do the show as a network.
No.
I mean, we saw what happened with Constantine.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think that would have been a shame. But having Trish Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Or Hellcat,
yeah.
To comic book fans,
and you know that's coming because all that set her manga,
they set her up so well. Moderate spoiler, I guess. Yeah, moderate spoiler because I do want to talk about this real quick. That scene where we first see that she's sitting in her office and her shoulders are arms are covered in bruises,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and just the nonchalant way her assistant says, "You might want to cover up."
Yeah.
Not out of shame, not out of just like, it's like, oh, hey, you know, it becomes clear that the reason is that we don't want to have to explain this because it's nobody's business and it doesn't matter.
Right.
But for a moment, you're like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And then you see her house and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah. They really did set that up. Well, and then the other one, when Hope's parents show up, you've got mm-hmm. a missing girl.
Right.
That's now in the hands of Kilgrave. Her parents show up from Omaha,
mm-hmm.
and Jess recommends that they go to Angela Del Toro,
mm-hmm.
which Netflix. Right about, I'm scrolling through because everybody's watching it at different times, of course.
Sure,
so you can't do very much in the way of live tweeting per episode.
Sure,
but I'm scrolling through, and there were so many people that caught that. You know, wait, Tiger. There was a White Tiger reference. Somebody said Angela Del Toro. And there are a lot of Easter eggs in this. But it really surprised me, again, you know, now that you mention it, it does surprise me that there's no mention at all about Kingpin.
Right.
Even radio TV coverage or mm-hmm. something going on. So I'm wondering, because did they even mention that she's in Hell's Kitchen?
Well, she's not so much in Hell's Kitchen as she's close by. And I think that this more so than Daredevil felt more like New York,
mm-hmm.
okay, as opposed to Hell's Kitchen, right?
Yeah.
And it felt, and maybe that's the contradiction there, is that it felt more like a citywide show. And so consequently, we should have had more references to what's going on inside the city when you've got something like, you know, Wilson Fisk and all of that going on. There should have been more, or the rumors of the vigilante. You know, all the, I don't know. Just maybe, but at the same time, like I said, when it didn't register until Rosario Dawson shows up.
You don't know you're not seeing it until you're not seeing it.
Right, because in many ways you don't, up until that point, you don't have a sense of the time frames and how they interact.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just. I tell you what, I was not sure about Kristen Ritter when she was cast in this. And now it's just like, where can I see more of her that I haven't seen her before and stuff I hasn't particularly registered?
Yeah. I mean, I caught bits and pieces of her sitcom.
Yeah.
You know, Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23 or whatever it was, that thing with Vanderbeek.
Which and, didn't appeal to me whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm looking at promos because I worked for an ABC affiliate mm-hmm. at the time. And I'm like, I just don't want to watch this show. It looks just rude. It mm-hmm. just looks awful. And, I don't know that I've seen her. I'm just coming off the top of my head, I don't think that I've seen her in anything.
Well, which I think in this respect probably helps.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have a preconceived notion of who she is as a dramatic actress.
Yeah.
And I think that probably gave her a little more room to play. If you cast Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, you're not casting against type.
Right.
I mean, he fits that role so well. And Chris Evans, you look at him, he's kind of been a chameleon. If you really look at a lot of his roles, he's done so much that's just all over the place in terms of, and a lot of people thought he was not going to be a great Captain America.
Yeah.
And then you see him, you're like, oh, Yes,
of course he is. Okay. Yeah.
So I think that here, you know, it's maybe because she didn't come with this, you know, built in. This is the kind of part she plays.
Yeah.
Thing. It gave her a chance to really just show us what she can do. I was really impressed.
And I saw she said somewhere that this was the part that she has been dying to play her entire career.
Oh, yeah.
Everything that she's done in her career has been for this, which I thought that's a really broad, sweeping statement to make.
Well, but think about it, though. She got a chance.
But it makes sense.
Yeah, you get to play drama. You get to play comedy. You get to, because you look at some of the pre-Kilgrave interactions with Trish, and she's funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a sardonic humor there, but still she's enjoying life a lot more.
Right. Well, it's like in the Sam Spade stories where, you know, he's interacting with his detective best friend
mm-hmm.
before the case starts.
Right.
And they're at odds with each other. It's that banter back and forth there. You've got to have that character mm-hmm. that you could do that with. Patsy, Trish, either way, Hellcat.
Right.
She's the perfect foil for that.
Well,
and the two actresses have a very good dynamic too.
Well, and with the 13 episodes, you get a chance to develop the friendship and show mm-hmm. that it is even if you didn't get the flashbacks to show them as children, you get that sense of history. You get that sense of partnership. You know, they tease each other the right way. They play off each other the right way. You get that. And, of course, you see it in the course of the series, but you get that sense that these two would do anything for the other one because they're right. friends.
And I'm glad that they played it as best friends
mm-hmm.
rather than ex-girlfriends, because it felt like in that first episode, why haven't you called me back? Why haven't you called me? You moved out and all that. I
sure.
thought, they're going to do that, because we'd already seen Jerry, Carrie Ann Moss's
right.
character,
mm-hmm.
who's male in the comic books,
right.
is now female, married to a woman who's, you know, they're going through a breakup and,
sure.
you know, I was like, okay, how many of these relationships are we going to have in one show? And I'm glad they didn't do that. The best friend dynamic works better.
Sure. I think so. But I think that what was interesting about her character, Carrie Ann Moss's character, is that when you look at the comic book and the character in the comic,
not any different.
Well, they're not anything alike. They're not. No, they're just. I mean, it's. I think it's very interesting. I kind of sat there and see why. Okay, on one level, I get why they took that as the basis of the character, but they didn't basically just make a female version of the character.
No,
the character in the comic is less morally flexible, because at the end of the day, Carrie Ann Moss is playing a character who is just not a very good human being.
No, she's not.
And
it comes back to bite her.
It does. And I think that at the end, she's got, she's in a place where I think she realizes that, but they don't dwell on it either. It's not like, here's my big revelation moment.
Right. But she gets that and her arc is done. We're done.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, there's an incremental move there, because, and I guess spoiler again, she loses so much in the course of it. That everything that she thinks she wants, or wanted, is taken away.
Yeah,
which is very film noir too.
Oh yeah, yeah, it is.
So it's
usually for the bad guy,
right? So, but it's interesting. I think that the character kept the name because they sat there and went, well, let's give the character the same name as the character in the comic. Mm-hmm. But the two characters have very little in common. There is another criticism I have for the show.
What's that?
The brother and sister duo.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
That was an odd direction that it took with the sister.
Yeah, and I think part of it is part of what I was so invested in everybody else that every time that whole subplot was on camera, it
just popped you out.
Well, no, it was interesting because I think it's I like the sort of impact. I like impact stuff. I like stuff where you show the impact of these things on other people. But I was so interested in watching the dynamic between Ritter and Tennant that I'm like, no, get back to that, get back to that. Or watching, you know, Jess and Luke play off each other.
Right.
And that whole kind of just
although the interaction with the brother actually, I think, helped with that humanizing factor, that moment at the end when – not at the end, but that moment at the end of the arc where she realizes that she can do some good for people.
Yeah.
Even though for some people it's too late. There's that, you know, the banana bread. It's the little things it's
– Well, and
you see that cracks the armor a little bit for her, and I think those scenes play for that.
Yeah, and you're right. But again, the other scenes were just so – You know, every time she and Tennant were on camera together,
yeah.
I mean, just the level of menace and threat and fear and anger.
But I wonder, you got to take a break from that every.
Oh
now
yeah,
and
I know, then. I know. And I just
plus the brother sister arc helped played into Malcolm's arc,
right?
You know, Malcolm, the next door neighbor, and his path from where he starts to where he ends at the end of the show. They have a lot to do with that.
Yeah,
it's
a matter.
It's all connected.
It's a matter of enjoying stuff and enjoying other stuff more. I mean, it's
true.
Like,
yeah.
It's not like, oh, are they on screen again? Kill me now. Yeah. It's more like, okay. This is interesting. Oh, look, it's the other guy. Oh, look, it's David Tennant being evil, or look, it's Luke Cage being cool.
I saw a comment somewhere. I don't remember where it was. I've seen a lot of comments. I don't remember where any of them are.
Oh yeah. The internet is very big.
The comment was about how Tennant's character never gave you any indication that he had any redeeming qualities at all. You know, because with villains, sometimes there's that one piece where maybe he starts on a redemption arc. Maybe he realizes that he's not quite doing the right thing. Maybe he needs to do something different or whatever. But no, Kilgrave is a sociopath all the way through. I mean, he never lets up at all that he's in the wrong, that he's doing anything he shouldn't ought to be doing. He just is so fixated and focused on Jessica. Nothing else matters. And he plays that through every episode and never lets up. And that was something that people were noticing, that he never has any regret.
Oh no. Well, even when he there's two moments, really, maybe three, two specifically, where you almost think you're going to get that. And one of them is Jessica trying to make him have that moment.
Yeah.
And he completely misses the point. And the other moment is where he interacts with his family. And you look at that scene and go, this is going to end not well. This is
right.
And
but the tension in that scene.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could feel it. And I did have a couple of spots that were not quite jump out of the seat, startle.
Right.
But it was almost, because it was things that was like, oh, what did they just do? Why?
Well,
wait. And I can't, we can't say it without giving it away, but there were a couple of those moments when I was sitting there and everything's perfectly fine. And then, oh!
Yeah. Well, there are, okay, if you want to go back to some of the best horror, okay, it's that sense of tension, that sense of build, that sense of of just mood that grows and grows and grows. And then look at what real life horror is. I mean, there's, you know, this is in many ways, this is the story of an abusive relationship.
Oh yeah,
and this
yeah,
is this
it
is
very much is,
and very much the if you were to strip away the Marvel universe and superpowers, there are so many moments here where you're going, that's what it looks like to be the person who is the abuser and the person who is the abused.
Right.
And that horrible dynamic where you can't escape.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you're free, even when you're not there, it's
yeah,
you're carrying
it's still in your head.
So the real life horror, and this is probably would not have played well on network television because they really give you that icky,
mm-hmm.
disturbing, this feels almost too real.
Yeah.
And some of those are the moments where I was just like, ah, ah, ah. Because if you've ever known someone who's been in an abusive relationship, you're like, oh, yeah.
That's what it looks like.
That's what it looks like. And it's made worse because, I mean, if you think about it, Kilgrave really is one of the most terrifying villains of the Marvel Universe. He just tells you what to do, and you mm-hmm. do it. And that's, I mean.
And I like the fact that they came up with a decent explanation as to how he's able to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not magic. It's not mind control. Although, I mean, it kind of is. But they try to give a scientific, you know, relatable,
right.
real world-ish type of explanation for it. He's not a metahuman. He's not a mutant.
He's a thing what was. Well, and interestingly, you know, there's not a whole lot of explanation for powers in Jessica Jones. I mean, he gets the biggest backstory for how
mm-hmm.
he gets his powers.
Yeah.
Luke Cage is like, it was an experiment.
Yeah.
And that's all he says.
Well, and Jessica's powers.
Yep.
After yep.
It was
after
an accident.
Her time in the hospital.
But even then.
But you've got the breadcrumbs. For mm-hmm. the next season.
Oh, yeah.
And that becomes... Plus, I think there's already some speculation that we've got next season's villain already with... what's his name? With the pills.
Oh,
I'm not going to say his name.
Yeah, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Yeah, that would give away a bit. But, you know, people are looking at that going, oh, I know who that character is.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Because he's this character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've got our... second season villain set up already.
I don't know if we'd come back to him. I kind of think we wouldn't.
Maybe maybe he shows up as a villain in Defenders.
I could see him showing up in Defenders. I can see potential stories that they could do with Luke Cage here.
Yeah.
And so you got Daredevil and Jessica and Luke, and I don't know what they're going to do with Iron Fist.
Because nobody knows what they're doing.
Because you're getting into mysticism here, and I think that if Doctor Strange comes out first, if we actually get it first, mm-hmm. Then Marvel, the MCU, will be primed for magic.
Yeah.
But I also really want to see. I really want to see the dynamic between who. Do we know who? Have they cast?
No,
Danny Rand yet?
We haven't got anything out of that show yet.
Well, there was the rumor that it was gone.
Well,
and now we know that it's not.
Yeah, somebody asked Jeff Loeb about it, and he said no, it's very much still in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know anything else beyond that.
Yeah, I think didn't Ray Park want to play that part at one point? Wasn't that something that he really said he wanted to play?
Sounds familiar.
He certainly got the martial arts skill for it.
Yeah.
I just see him, especially in this particular iteration of the characters.
Too old?
I think he's too old.
Yeah.
You think you'd probably want to get a guy in his, you could do early 30s, I think, and, uh-huh. and get away with it and feel. Cause
well, you'd want somebody about Charlie Cox's age.
But you got to play the two, you got to play him off Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. You got to, and so you need to have somebody who's going to have that kind of, I mean.
And he needs to be smaller.
He needs to be smaller, but he also, the contrast between someone who is.
What about Joseph Gordon-Levitt? I mean, he's busy with Sandman, but he'd Physically, I think he would work.
Yeah, potentially. I don't know how he is in terms of, you know, you got to have somebody who sells the martial arts.
Matt Damon.
Well, okay, you know what? Maybe we ought to be watching for the End of the Badlands cast. Because I mean that show is in all martial arts.
Right.
And martial arts and mascara. I've now finally watched the first two episodes of that show, and I can say
that's the title of a web series right there.
I know,
isn't it?
Well,
let's,
I think
let's make the one.
I think add it to the list of our web series. Everyone,
yeah.
I think that, you know, and not necessarily the leads, because I haven't seen anybody in the lead who would necessarily be that character. But watch for somebody who's got the skill set, because mm-hmm. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head who really does. But you. Imagine the fight scenes in Daredevil, which are just brute force fights, you know. But then, you know, the grace of a martial artist. I'm just like, this could be shot so cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, and we're starting to see a trend now with last week's Arrow episode,
mm-hmm.
and I got a hold of some lists today of some new productions that are in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of stunt coordinators who are becoming first-time directors. They're being given features and pilots. And the Arrow episode Brotherhood was directed by their stunt coordinator. For, you know, it's his first time directing. And online, the raves about the episode and about how well he did as a director with that material. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more, especially given the fact that we've got so much out there that's action, thriller, spy, superhero thing. It only makes sense that your stunt people are going to start sitting there going, you know, if you put the camera over here,
mm-hmm.
Because they've got to make everything work for the shot.
Right.
So why not call the shot?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Well, and I think that if you've got the skill set that not only enables you to do that, but also to work with actors mm-hmm. on a performance level. I mean, aside from just the physical level, which is a performance level too. But I mean, you know, in terms
of different type.
If you've got it, then give these folks a chance to show it off, because I know that I couldn't choreograph a fight scene and have it be impressive than on the scale that some of these folks are doing.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
Let's
try.
Oh God. And that's when the actor said, stop. But now he's just, there's a breaking out of some of these specific roles, which I think is really, really good for the industry, because mm-hmm. it's not, you know, you're not, everybody's, people aren't being pigeonholed into, then this is just the stunt coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, that's, it's nice to shake that up every now and again and let these folks out to play. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, and we've played long enough, I think, on this particular one.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, Jessica Jones, very dark.
Very dark.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best that they've done so far.
I think so. I really do.
Hoping for more.
Oh, yeah.
And looking forward to Luke Cage.
Very much so. That's going to be
sweet Christmas.
Best use of sweet Christmas that you could possibly ask for. Mm-hmm. And luckily he didn't have to wear a terrible 1970s funk outfit.
Yeah. And it was organic to the story. I mean, it was just right there and there it was and it was done. And they didn't make any big.
And for the folks who have no idea who he is, it works perfectly. And for mm-hmm. the folks who are fans, they sat there and went, that's awesome.
There it is, yeah. All right. We're still hoping for Jennifer Walters to show up. I'm still calling it. She's going to be at the end of Defenders.
I hope so.
We'll see her there. I mean, Daredevil makes perfect sense for her to show up there.
Mm-hmm,
but, sure. You know, who knows? We'll see. All right. That's going to do it for us here on Level 117. We're going to continue our conversation over on H2O. Just the two of us. Back next week with another episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we do have invitations out to cast and crew to join us on these discussions. And so far, we haven't gotten anybody willing to take that dare. But hopefully, maybe, sometime.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see what happens on that. Until then, next week we're gonna head out and have some more coffee, and have a good Thanksgiving, everyone. And yes, thanks very much for listening, and share it with everyone. If you want to give us your thoughts on Jessica Jones, you can send us an email, level 11. I was about to say Jessica Jones at sci-fi. Level 1187.
She gets her own show. She's that good.
Yes, yes. All the things. Level 1187 at sci-fi4me.com, or you can call our hotline 573-42-SCI-FI. Let us know what you think about the show, about Jessica Jones, about how we're doing on all of our shows. Number of podcasts that you can find over at iTunes, just look for Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Or you can go to sci-fi4me.com and click the podcast tab, and join us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr. Mm-hmm. And that's going to do it for us. We will be back with hopefully the full gang of meddling kids on next week's episode of Level 1187. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
This has been a presentation of sci-fifor-me.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.